Okay, I'd like to begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, April 4th, 2011, approximately a little after 6 p.m. here at Forest Glen School. I'd appreciate it if you just take a minute to take a look at the last meeting's minutes and let me know if they needed your approval.
Okay, here.
I'm good. Okay, we have a sort of a walk-on. I provided you with a dental report that we completed just this afternoon.
Dental report is a board report.
There it is. Okay. Sorry for the late. Sorry to get this report to you late. We just received pricing very late last week. We had an insurance review team meeting this afternoon. So we put this together and wanted to at least give you a brief presentation in terms of what the expectations are for insurance renewals for the coming fiscal year. And I'm just going to give you the high points, if you will. We would be looking. Currently, we're a self-insured dental plan, and we would be looking to move this with the endorsement of the insurance review teams. We're looking to move this insurance to EBC, the Education Benefit Cooperative, who also carries our medical plan. And basically, what we've done is we've had two prices for dental insurance: the renewal from Blue Cross Blue Shield, which came in at 3.6%, and then we just received the proposal. If we were to move with to EBC, we would actually receive a 3.4% decrease to premium. So we were looking at it after Lori and I and Phyllis met with the insurance review team this afternoon. You know, we're looking at a 3.6% increase plus the reserve that we keep, so it would be a 5.6% increase, or a 3.4% increase to move to a fully insured plan, which would give us some long-term stability too. You saw with the renewal came back, so medical came back very nicely this year. So basically the same thought process, more life together, joining in a larger cooperative, probably would reduce those highs and lows that we've experienced throughout the years. So I wanted to provide this to you now. We're looking for your support. We're going to take this to the board for discussion on April 18th, our board meeting, and then we will be bringing the medical and the dental to the board for approval on May 2nd. Well, I think we just had a brief conversation. Okay.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. What were you going to say? Maybe I misspoke.
Is it just dental that we're bringing the board? It's just a renewal?
Just a renewal.
Right.
Because we're changing, we would need the board to approve the dental switch, but they don't need to approve the medical.
Okay. So I misspoke. It's not really approval, but
approval of the dental.
Correct.
You pulled it out of the hat. Good for you. I mean, it sounds like a no-brainer. What's is there any downside to?
We don't see any downside to this. As you know, it's worked out very well for us with the EBC for the medical plan, and we see this as a win situation for the dental plan also. So I just wanted to bring that to you so you had some preliminary information as we move this to the board discussion. Each board member does have the packet. We're going to allow them to review it at their leisure. And like I said, we'll be bringing it back to the board for discussion on April 18th and for action on May 2nd. Okay? Any questions? And I just wanted to mention something. We have a very full agenda for this evening, so we need to sort of keep on a time frame. We need to get through all of the agenda items that are listed. So if I sent the time is sort of drawing near and that we need to move on, I might have to mention it during the discussion. Okay? The next order of business sent for this evening is the copier machine, the results of the RFP. District 41 has 19 machines spread throughout the district at all of our buildings. Generally, we produce approximately $9 million copies per year with regards to copiers. We had the current agreement was entered into approximately 3 years ago. The current vendor is ConocoMinolta. I put the existing price, the estimated price is $67,385 for the lease of the equipment and $49,905 for what we call the service agreement, which includes copier charges for a total cost of approximately $117,290. That's the existing agreement that we have in place. As this agreement is running out, due to term this coming summer, we went out for an RFP for copier services. We sent out an RFP to 12 vendors. They turned around and submitted 14 different proposals to us. And after careful review, we believe that the lowest bid that was submitted is being supplied by Chicago Office Technology, or COTG Group. Their annual cost, let's see, we have a spreadsheet here. Take a look at that. On the third page of that spreadsheet over in the right-hand corner is the pricing for COTG. The total equipment cost is approximated at $54,133.92. That's the lease cost for that equipment. The service agreement cost per year is $42,621.97 for a total annual cost of approximately $96,755. I also provided what the cost will be to the district over a three-year period, because that's basically how we made our decision in terms of decision and ultimately a recommendation to the Finance Committee Board in terms of what we would see as the best deal for the district, and that's estimated at $290,267. So, as I was stating, that we did go out to bid, we received pricing from 12 vendors. We're estimating the cost, totaling annual cost of approximately $96,000, and based upon the information that's presented in this board report, we're looking at savings of approximately $20,500 over or per year. So what we're looking for is board finance committee support as we move this through the discussion and approval process with the Board of Education. Any questions?
I have a real quick question.
Sure.
I'm looking at you said it. $290,000?
Yes.
I'm trying to find that on the spreadsheet.
Sure. Page 3, little right-hand corner.
Okay.
These are the cost of COPG.
Okay.
Yeah, the vendors are the top of the column.
Page 1 and 2, you'd have to lay out side by side.
Right.
Page 3 and
right.
4 layouts side by side.
Bob, why is it that the costs are down? I mean, it seems like that's a significant cost saving.
Well, I'm going to tell you that there's quite a bit of competition out there right now. And it looks like the actual lease cost, when you look at some of the other vendors supplying lease costs from 70 to 65, 74, 62, it looks like the greatest reduction actually is in the cost of the equipment that's being leased, down to $54,000. And as far as the service agreement cost, they're about $42,600. That's kind of in the middle of the ballpark for this proposal here. So it looks like the most of the reduction came through the lease cost itself. We find that these machines generally have a useful life for us of about 3 years. We go out to bid every 3 years, and they're used daily, probably hourly, in every building throughout the district. So it's important to us that we look at an annual 3 year lease period with this particular piece of equipment, because they do take quite a few over the years. Any questions?
So they're all the same units that go everywhere?
Mm-hmm.
you know, there'll be 15 workstations, as we, as you've seen at CSO and at Lincoln and their workroom and so forth. There's 15 major workstations. Those are sort of the workhorses in the district. Then we'll have three tabletop units, smaller tabletop units, and then we have one color copier that we use over at CSO. So what I did is, I will tell you that just about every vendor had a different way of presenting their numbers, although we presented a table for them and expected them to sort of follow a set guideline in terms of submitting cost to us. We spent significant time pulling apart their bids, analyzing their cost out there, because there were additional calculations that needed to be made just from what they submitted. We had to go out and calculate what the cost are for the color machine and CSO, and then what the per page cost are for the color machines as well as the black and whites, because they would give us strictly a 0.005 cost or something along those lines. They never came out and gave you an approximated cost of what it is overall for annually and over the 3-year period.
We have for the larger machines, we use a common machine across the district because they can share supplies.
So everyone knows how to use
they're
each one.
They're also networked so that large print jobs from a classroom can be sent to those machines versus printing it up on a desktop mobile printer, which is more cost effective also. So.
Okay. I think we're okay with it. All right.
So the next order of business then this evening is the transportation bid. To give you a little background, we in the Glenbard Consortium District have gone out to bid for our transportation individually. We took a different approach this year, and we asked all the Glenbard feeder districts to get together. Most of them declined, although we did get four elementary school districts. Ourselves, District 41, 89, 16, decided to form a consortium with District 87 and go out to bid as a group, feeling that the bigger pot we sort of have out there in terms of total transportation cost, the better buy we might be able to leverage. And so in December of this year, we began to get together as a group. We created big documents. Again, there were four districts that formed a consortium and went out to bid together. On March 11th, we posted the bid with a solicitation for transportation services, and those bids were due back March 28th. By the way, this is for a 3-year agreement that will begin July 1st, 2011 and expire June 30th, 2014. So, included in the first page of your report there are the results of the four vendors that did participate in this bid process. We had four that submitted bids. We had two that declined, Positive Connections and Lakeview Bus Company declined to participate. So, just briefly, you can look at the spread in District 41 as well as the total of the districts. And I'll speak in totals and then individually. Illinois Central School Bus was the low bidder as a consortium for approximately $11,400,000 versus but our portion of that for the 3-year period would be $1.8 million. You can see those bids go from a low of $1.8 million for District 41 to a high of almost $3.1 million with our existing vendor for student. You want to talk about total dollars? They ran from $11,400,000 to a high of almost $17 million. We're talking $5, $6 million in savings from low to high bid. When you look at Illinois Central versus First Student, there's a $2.2 million separation between the lowest and the next lowest bidder per student. That's $2.2 million. And if you look at just District 41, it's $1,285,000 over a 3-year period. So we're looking at savings between the low bidder and the next lowest bidder per student of $1,285,000 over 3 years. I would tell you that the savings just this year, currently with First Student, and as we move into next fiscal year, is in excess of $225,000. So this turned out to be a great savings to the district. I don't feel as though we would have been in nearly the position that we would be in, that we're in today, had we decided to go out individually and solicit bids as sort of solo. So, as I said, the other districts are taking this to their boards over the next couple of weeks, and we'll be looking to bring this to the board for discussion on April 18th, and then for action in the first part of the meeting on May 2nd. So, it's my recommendation that we move to Illinois Central. We have done quite a bit of analysis and asked a lot of questions. All their insurance is in order. I spoke to four or five districts that currently utilize the services of Illinois Central. Had nothing. The worst complaint was outstanding, and the best was excellent. So they seem to really do a nice job. I'm sure there'll be some hangups when we, you know, whenever you move transportation. But we've had problems with transportation before. We've dealt with them effectively this year, and it's our intention to deal with them just as effectively. So we'll have some. We might have some transitional issues, but we'll work very closely hand in hand with Illinois Central to minimize those disruptions to the greatest extent possible. So that is our recommendation, and we will be looking for the Finance Committee's support as we move this through the conversations with the board.
Are we all signing our own contracts?
Yes.
Okay. So is there any issues?
We bid this as a consortium, but we're going to be signing contracts individually.
Okay.
The contracts, we have worked very closely with the attorneys on this. They have been in from when we first started to meet, created the bid documents, through giving us some advice on how to handle the different questions that have come up, as well as they are creating the individual contracts that we'll utilize to sign with Illinois Central.
Does everyone in the consortium have to go with Illinois Central?
Yes, that's the way it was bid.
Are you going to subsidize District 18, who had the lowest bid from Subtran? I mean,
they're the only ones
that's
that
what I'm just saying.
Didn't have the lowest bid for.
Are they mandated then to?
Yeah, and they've agreed to do it. Now, I should say their business manager and superintendent. The conversations I've had conversations with the business manager, and he says his superintendent supports it fully. So that I have not obviously.
Yeah, they still have to have their conversation with the board.
Yeah. We are the first ones to start this process. Everybody will be moving forward in the next week or so.
Well, what would happen if, you know, they just said, well, we could go to Septran separately and get a better deal? I mean, what if just 87, 41, and 89 were part of it?
My belief is Septran probably wouldn't beat that price of $393. They bid it as a consortium.
Okay.
Also.
All right.
They bid all four districts together. So to start pulling and picking pieces
right.
apart.
Well, there's separate numbers here, so I'm sure someone looked at. Where's Illinois Central's depot for this district?
Okay, the Illinois Central. They have a depot, Joliet, Shanahan area.
Yeah.
But we're working with them. It was put into the bid document that they have up to a year to find a location that's within 10 miles, 15 miles of District 8, of the central offices of District 87. So they have up to a year to work with that.
Mm-hmm.
But we've spoken with them, we've met with them, we've conference called, and they feel very confident they're going to be more than capable of performing these services. And I don't know this for a fact, but maybe they're going to take over.
They're not just going to hire First Student's employees to drive their.
Well, that's happened. Illinois Central has made a full push to move
right.
into this area of northern Illinois, and they took over several districts that were in the south suburbs.
Yeah.
And they hired First Student's personnel, as well as, I believe, leased property or have taken over property that they've had under agreement previously.
All right.
Are there in the contract escalation factors for fuel?
We bid, there are, but when this bid, when it was originally bid back in 2001, I believe the price of gas that was included in that original document was like $1 or $1.25 a gallon. We moved up that price to $3 a gallon.
Uh-huh.
So there will be some escalators in there, but there have always been escalators in there. And when we took this, when we started this process back in December or January, we thought $3 was a reasonable price. I don't know what it's, you know, where that sort of reasonableness is now.
But is everybody's escalator the same?
Everybody's
the bid documents?
Correct. Okay. Everybody's is the same. So we'll all be dealing with the same issue.
Okay.
As I understand it, you were the spearhead in terms of putting the consortium together, and was the
champion of this. I was.
You should be.
I was instructed we need to do this, so that's what I did.
For both of you guys to pull out $225,000 of savings from the prior year. It's huge, and I applaud your efforts.
Well, we were shocked when we opened these bids. We were shocked and very, very, very happy with the way the results came in. And like I said, we've done our homework. We've talked to Illinois Central. We've gone and checked the references, and everything seems to be in order. Again, I spoke to four or five school districts, and they were all very complimentary. Every once in a while, a little, you know, hiccup in the system, but the communication lines are open. They've never had a problem with getting something resolved and getting it resolved quickly.
Are they using the same geocracking software as the first student?
Everybody seems to use Versatrans, so I'm assuming that that's what they're using, but I don't know that for a fact.
Okay.
It's obvious that just by the size of the organization, they're more than a pen and paper type of operation. They're one of the largest in the U.S., sixth largest.
Yeah, but you can keep them as long as you got two people, two companies wanting to bid it. That's good to have the competition. I hate to ask, but to just assume they can drive a big bus on that bridge up Hill Avenue.
Yes, they have a year by July 1st of 2012, they're expected to have a facility within 15 miles of the administrative offices of District 87. But we have had conversations with them in terms of their ability to perform this contract. And we feel confident that they will be able to perform. And they made the comment that they're already out looking. Their intention is not to wait a year or... They're looking. They're aggressively seeking property right now. So this may happen in the next few months. I don't know. We'll certainly keep track of it. We'll certainly provide with the Finance Committee updates as that information becomes available.
Have you ever had a situation where you had to send students home really quick? I remember that storm a couple years ago.
We've not had any situation where we wouldn't send students home. We would send them to another location. And that is one of the reasons why it's important that we have a barn that is close to us, ultimately. But my guess is, and I think Bob's alluded to this, that they wouldn't be bidding up here in the northern, you know, the western suburbs in the northern, more northern part of the state if they were not planning on expanding their fleet up here. Just doesn't make, you know, it doesn't make efficiency sense for them either.
No, especially the cost of fuel. And I believe we're the first sort of major, we are the first district in DuPage County. They have a significant presence out in the south suburban area in Will County and Cook County. So they're moving up there. And we started speaking with these folks. They submitted a letter, I'm not going to say a year ago, but last summer, last fall, sort of prompting us to go out to bid. Because we had not received communication previously, these folks wrote us, and that kind of started the ball rolling in terms of going out to bid. And that's when we called the other districts and see if they had some, at least preliminarily, had some interest in forming a cooperative and going out to bid for this as sort of a package. And we, just backtracking a bit, we did speak with all the consortium districts. Some have agreements currently in place, some have them with other bus companies. And these are the four that came together and said, let's do this joint. And as I said, there are significant savings to be realized as a result of this bid.
Where are their headquarters?
Well, they have a regional headquarters in the Joliet-Shanahan area.
Okay.
I'm not real sure where their corporate headquarters are at. But they do have a significant...
Are they a national company?
I think they're pretty well national.
Okay.
So that's where we're at now.
Are we getting any new? Are they technology on the buses? Are they buying anything different in terms of the buses we're using?
Well, included in the bid docs were requirements for cameras and.
Do we have cameras now?
No.
Are these cameras that just record while they're driving, or you can see it remotely what's going on?
Oh, I don't. You know what? I don't
Most
know.
Most of them are recording.
Okay.
And GPS.
The comment was made during one of our meetings that District 87 had just gone out and put cameras in all the buses that they had for first students. So they'll be taking those out and we'll be utilizing
them. Oh, okay.
So, as you know, we piggyback off of 87th route, so I'm sure that we'll get used to the same equipment.
Most of the time, it's a separate negotiations. If you want cameras in the buses, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, you can, you know,
okay.
And we do have our emergency radio. Right. One of our emergency radios over at First Student, so we'll need to take that out and have that wired.
I was just curious if there are any other benefits, or is it just price?
Mm-hmm. You know, they seem like a very aggressive company with their pricing, but they also during our conversations, they were more than cooperative in terms of any type of additional services we were looking for, they were willing to provide. So far, it's been, obviously it hasn't been implemented yet, but it's been a nice conversation so far.
With the exception of the finding that it's a Hubble location, again, protecting the arm, is there any downside? Is there anything here that would give us any hesitation at all?
Once I made those reference checks, it sort of allayed my fears, because I was concerned. Anybody, when there's a $5 or $6 million difference between a low bidder and a high bidder, it causes me a little heartburn and just concern. So, like I said, I called the folks that were responsible for transportation in other districts, and they were all very, very, they just thought the company was great. They've done a nice job, very attentive and reactive to any issues that they may have or have had.
So
significant savings as we move forward. Any other questions then for this evening on transportation? Okay. The next order of business then this evening will be the Hadley computer refresh, and I'm going to let Mike Wood make that presentation.
And we're going to look at some new technology for Hadley. Steve asked you to take a look at those. Those are the two form factors we looked at.
You get to keep these?
For sure, we don't get to keep those. Those are just demos from our vendor. So Hadley is due for a computer refresh. It's been at least 6 years now. We're in our sixth year with the newest technology we have there for the PCs and classes.
Set it down.
So those are starting to kind of wear. Seen a lot of failure on those. That's a smaller model. They're coming out with a slightly larger screen.
Yeah, that's what my main concern when I talked to Mike was the kids were going to be taking their ISATs on this MyMap test. Were they big enough screens?
And I did run through a couple of map tests, and it's clear enough to read. We can adjust the resolution a little bit to make it slightly larger. But I kind of felt if I could read it, students probably wouldn't have any trouble reading. So we did run through. My main concern was that everything would fit on the screen, because that's one of the things that we had heard about the netbooks, the resolution on those small screens.
They're 1300 by 800 approximately.
Right. So these come with a slightly better graphics card to be able to handle that resolution, so we can actually fit the entire contents of the screen on there, the contents of the form on the screen. So what we would use these for primarily would be internet access and access to the office suite. We can load some really lightweight applications like Test Taker, which we use for math, PhotoStory, Audacity, which are a couple of free programs that we use right now for video creation and audio creation. But currently we have about 259 desktops in the district, or in Hadley total. And that's sort of a mix of newer PCs, which we're going into our sixth year with, and some very old PCs, kind of like that form factor there. And those were the first PCs I put in the district
right.
9 years ago. So, I mean, those have really hit the wall. They're fairly serviceable for us. And those kind of supplement in the classroom. So the teacher would have a workstation that's slightly newer. But then they may have two or three or a collection of those for student use. And it's just not a good fit. It hasn't been a good model for us for the last couple of years. So when we met with to have the department chairs last October to talk about what their needs were and what they felt they were going to need, and the biggest thing that came up was just access to technology. We didn't have enough technology to go around for student use. And the desktops in the rooms were too cumbersome, and then we had the inequity where some teachers may have five or six, where other teachers may only have two. So what we were looking at were more mobile solutions, things that we can get in quantity for a lower price, and that could be moved easily. So that's why we started looking at these netbooks. And the netbooks have come a ways since they first came out. There's a lot more horsepower in those. When we spec these out, we wanted to get a little bit extra memory for them, a little extra storage, and like we talked about before, the resolution for the screen, so it would be able to accommodate the applications that we know we're going to use on them. And we have tested these for the last couple of months, and the HP seemed to fit our needs the best. So what our plan is to replace all of the desktops in the classroom for teachers' use, and those will be hooked up to whatever AV equipment is available in the rooms. Mostly it's going to be a projector in some of the rooms. Hopefully there'll also be a smart board. And that PC would basically be used to handle the AV equipment and also for the teachers' use for email access to the office, just for daily business use, that sort of thing. But then when we were looking for student use, the netbook just seemed to be a better fit. At Hadley, what they usually do with PCs for students would be research on the web, use of the office suite, maybe a couple light applications, but that's the bulk of what they would do in the classroom. Any of the heavier computing they would do in the lab, certain special labs like Vitech or class. So we looked at these as being a better fit for student use in the classroom. And what our plan is to roll about 500 of these out into the building. And the carts we're looking at will accommodate 20 of these for charging them and storage and securing them. So we'd get 25 carts that we could put these 500 in and then locate them in certain areas of the building, mainly targeting certain content areas and by grade level. So 6th grade social studies would have their collection of carts, open cart. 7th grade social studies would have a collection of carts, math, 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, in that way. And LA would probably get a little bit more of those because they're just more sections of LA. And there was a greater demand for use because they do use them right now on a one-to-one basis. So these would be for just kind of daily light computing that they would use for convenience in the classroom. Then we also have about 270 laptops, kind of like this one, that are currently in the building. Now, just for space and storage, we probably cut that in half. We leave about 120 of them at half. 100 of them would be available for student use, and then 20 would be available for teachers if they wanted to take them out just to be mobile for different projects, or even if they had work they needed to do at home on a checkout basis, they have them available. The other 100 would be used for the same way they're used now, on a checkout basis from the library. So teachers could use them either to supplement what they already have for netbooks or for some heavier computing needs. We can roll a lot more software on a laptop like this. It can do a lot more than the netbook can. So these would still be available for certain special softwares that we still use at the junior high. So like I said, those would still be available. Then we'd distribute these throughout the building. So we looked at a couple different vendors, and we also looked at the Dell product for the netbooks as well. And we fit those against each other. We had Heartland was one of the vendors we contacted for pricing on these, and that's where we got the demos from, as a matter of fact. And Tiger Direct, we also contacted. And the quotes came back. The desktop model we looked at was the 8100. It's an HP. We also looked at a comparable Dell, but Dell doesn't really have a form factor that's comparable to what the HP has. We wanted a smaller form factor, but not the ultra slim form factor, which is what we have right now in the junior high, and we've run into a lot of issues with those as time has gone on, just with heat. They don't handle heat dissipation because of the size of the box. So, but at the same time, we didn't want a large tower that was going to take up a lot of space and be bulky, and then also escalate our costs. So, as much as I wanted to include a Dell comparable desktop, they just didn't have one that really fit our needs. So, the HP is the one we decided on. Between the two, we like the HP 5103, the netbook. It's a little bit more responsive. And they also come with a tamper-proof keyboard. I don't believe that one has that, but as you can imagine, the keys tend to get popped off at the junior high, so that'd be one minor thing that we can hopefully avoid.
To do what with them? Just
they'll switch the position of the keys, so the X key will be...
Tamper is like, you know, they're trying to, you know, get your fingerprints off.
So we did like that one slightly better than we like the Dell. They're both comparably priced, and we're going to recommend the HP 5103 for student use. We got pricing from both Heartland and Dell on both models.
Heartland and Tiger.
I'm sorry?
Heartland and Tiger Direct, you mean?
Right, Heartland and Tiger Direct.
Okay.
And Heartland's pricing was slightly less than Tiger Direct's. And what we would do for financing with the laptops and netbooks, the lifespan of a piece of equipment like this is really going to only be about 3 years before you're going to start to see some real wear and tear on it, particularly with the battery. The way I envision these being used is they charge all night, you take them out of the cart, and that's it. You use them as is. You run off battery. We also had these spec'd out with a slightly higher capacity battery. So this is a 6-cell battery. The standard is a 4. They claim 11 hours of use out of that 6-cell battery, but I'm thinking realistically, if you get 4 to 5 hours with heavy use, you're going to be lucky. So at some point during the day, probably during lunch, they'll charge them just for afternoon use. But and it's better to use the battery anyway. The more the battery is used, the longer the lifespan of that battery is going to be. So, but after 3 years, you've probably seen about the best of that battery you're going to get. And rather than incurring the cost of purchasing a lot of new batteries and just the wear and tear and damage that they're physically going to take over those 3 years, we're opting for a fair market value lease on these. So over the course of that lease, we actually wind up paying less than the value of the laptops. And at the end of the lease, we're going to turn them back over to the leasing company, and they'll take them. And then we'll go through the refresh cycle again, and we'll reevaluate what's going to be the best fit for our students 3 years from now. And it may not be a netbook. It may not be a laptop. It may be a tablet. It may be a different technology that's now emerging, like a lot of the tablets that we're seeing that are coming into the market. And like I say, I think that's probably about the longest amount of time I feel comfortable. We also look to purchase the extended warranty for these, so they'll be covered under warranty for the 3 years, the course of the lease. And again, at the end of that lease, we would turn those back over to the leasing agent. For the desktops, we would go with a 5-year dollar buyout lease. This way, we can retain these desktops, as we're doing now with a lot of the desktops that we have. Like the old 7100s, which is the newer model, the 6-year-old model at Hadley, we'll redistribute those throughout the buildings. And they'll come to the grade schools to replace old PCs like this, sort of specialist areas. We still have quite a few of these old machines. With a minimal upgrade of memory, we can keep those serviceable for at least another year. We have enough of them at Hadley right now to be able to fill in the gaps at the grade schools where we need to, and also for just stopgap PCs as things come up for replacements, as things break down. And we plan to do the same thing with the desktops that we acquire for this purchase. We probably roll those back out. Now, having this is sort of the first building that really is on the refresh cycle, and as the cycle begins again, we will continue to use things like a desktop for could be 6-7 years after the purchase of them before we start to really see the failure rate escalate. So that was our plan, and our recommendation is to go with Heartland for the purchase of both the desktop and the notebook models, and acquiring financing through American Capital, who we have most of our technology leases through. The netbooks on the fair market value lease over 3 years, and the desktops on a dollar buyout lease over 5 years.
Any questions? When you look at these what do you call these netbooks?
Netbooks.
The cost, so like when I see a cost here in this table, that's the lease cost, that's not the actual buy cost.
On the top?
Yeah, the $497.
That's the actual purchase cost. That's the purchase cost of the netbook. And then $76 is the extended lease cost for the netbook, or warranty.
So then, I'm just trying to compare. So I see a total of $250, we'll call it, to purchase them versus a lease is $305?
I'm sorry, where did you see the $250 for purchase?
This is in the, he said the Heartland quote book.
The lease is just paying for the cost over time.
$248.5, you're saying?
Right.
Over the car, or over the course of the lease.
Yeah, but in theory, at least, if this is not a dollar buyout, so you're not financing the whole cost of it. You're financing a portion of it. This seems to be quite a difference that I'm trying to understand.
The annual, the three market, the 3-year fair market lease costs $101,924 per year, right? Mm-hmm. For the whole Heartland package. I mean, desktop and minis.
No, so just the minis. Notebooks.
So that's the $497 and the $76, right? Or is that also the storage card?
That's also the storage card, and actually, I should move the storage card to the dollar buyout lease now that I look at that, because we'll keep the storage.
Yeah, you're not.
Are all these expenditures budgeted through the agent obsolescence plan?
There is the agent obsolescence plan that this is a part of, yes.
But I mean, this is budgeted for.
Yes, it'll be part of the budget as we move forward. Yes, it will.
Okay.
So the lease cost for the minis will be lower than 101 once the storage cards are.
Right, we move the storage cards to the 5-year lease, so that will bring down the cost.
So that'll go down there and then up on the dollar buyout on the.
And I can revise those numbers and get those to you.
Bring them back.
Right. When they come back to discussion, we'll have that shift.
Did that answer your question, Dan?
Well, I guess I was just trying to understand what, you know.
Basically, wants to compare buying them outright versus
just
leasing them.
Yeah. What's the? I mean, I can understand for technology that goes.
Well, the outright purchase for the netbooks. Right. So it'd be $323,825. If we just purchased them outright. The straight up costing is in the table up top. The lease cost cost would be below.
So
you're saving $18,000. Of course we're gonna remove the storage cards, but
yeah, maybe if you add a row for the lease cost just so you can see.
But it sounded like there was gonna be a larger for it's not a dollar buy. It sounds like there's some
it's a fair market
right. Residual value.
Right. But and that's you're giving that back though.
Right.
So we're effectively
spending less.
But what I'm saying is, with all these leases, there's so much we budget for technology every year. You're paying on a lease. So every 3 years you get new ones, it's just there's always a constant dollar amount we're spending on technology.
Right.
Per year.
Right.
So is it budgeted? We've always budgeted for technology. Even though we're actually getting new ones every 3 years, we're always in the middle of some lease.
Right. But in the past, we really haven't gotten everything. So right now, we're sort of putting this plan in place where we would have a regular refresh cycle. See, in the past, we've been hanging on to certain equipment like these old desktops for 8-9 years.
Right.
And even at the junior high, where we should have been on more of a 3-5 year refresh cycle, we're just getting to it now, and we're 6 years in with the previous purchase. So, which is fine with desktops, but we never had a real plan for the mobile technology, which doesn't have as much of a lifespan as the desktops have. So now as we're sort of, technology is emerging, and we're starting to emerge or change with it, we need to sort of change our philosophy on how we refresh it, how often we refresh it, and how we fund it. And by going with the leasing, at least then we know we're going to have X amount that's going to turn over every 3 years. We'll already have that as sort of a placeholder that we'll know these netbooks are going to need to be replaced. Whereas if we just purchased them outright, you know, we wouldn't have that placeholder for the technology budget.
Not only that, there is a cost to disposing of that technology once it is obsolete for us.
Correct.
So you're saving that cost by having a lease.
Correct. And in the past, when we can get rid of things that are still serviceable, we can donate them, which is what we have been doing. We've either donated them to the Resource Center here in Wheaton, or the Condo School District, Chicago Public School District. So everybody comes out a winner there, but with some of the really old technology, basically we really don't have any choice but to dispose of it. It does get very costly to do that. So it also gets us on a cycle where we're not retaining and having to store all of this old hardware, and we're also not having to pay to have it disposed of.
I think it was at Franklin last year when you showed that phased-in chart. So what you're saying is instead of getting that partial over 5 years, now we're getting onto a larger cycle.
Mm-hmm. Right, and also the demand for technology has grown since over the last 5 years. So teachers want to use it more and more in their classroom, and they're right now struggling, particularly at Hadley, for the availability of this technology. And also the labs are booked constantly. So it's one of the other complaints that we have heard from staff is they can never get into the labs. And it's the same teachers generally that use the labs. So this will free up the labs. This will give those them the opportunity to do some more heavy computing in the labs rather than with the availability of the additional netbooks that would be close by. They wouldn't have to go to the library.
Now, how are we not? How do we not have to go out for a public bid for this? I mean, we've got two vendors, but why is it different than the
tech is exempt?
Tech,
what's that?
Tech in the school code, it's exempt.
Ah, okay. The copiers are.
I probably didn't have to do this to myself for copiers.
The copiers we could have done, just done a great proposal, not necessarily a published bid.
So I brought this up myself.
Gotcha. But it saved us a lot of money here.
Yeah, we've been saving quite a bit of money lately.
I mean, these are almost commodity type prices that we're looking at here anyway, right? I mean, are you going to see a lot of variation if we had 10 bidders for the same?
Probably not a lot. What they're working off of, particularly HP, is there's a government contract that's run through the state. Uh-huh. So we're getting the state pricing and we're getting the large purchase pricing. And as I've looked around, I mean, even when you look at retailers, they're really not, we're still coming out cheaper than you would get at most any retail place. And when you purchase through the state or when you purchase directly through HP, you're getting a business line piece of equipment. It's not a consumer-level product that you're going to get at Best Buy or Tiger Direct. So you're getting premium components with this as well, and we're getting the backing of HP and the warranty. So one of the points in the decision is we've worked with Heartland, which used to be Victorin, for several years and for service and support, and always have gotten the highest quality service and support from them. So we know what to expect when we have hardware that fails, and they've taken very good care of us over the years. So
the warranty through HP or is it through Heartland?
Warranty is through HP, but Heartland fulfills the warranty work. I mean, if we were not satisfied with the level of work we had gotten from Heartland, we could always look to another HP certified vendor to do the service. They pick that up.
Well, what's covered under the netbook warranty? It looks like, 3 years is more than 10%. Like for the desktop, you're getting 5 years for 10% of the cost. I mean, if they get dropped totally, do they just replace it? They don't ask, well, you dropped it, not
and
this wasn't very terrible.
Heartland's been very good to us when it comes to that. As you can imagine, we've had more than a few where it's been dropped or there's been keys that have been popped off and they've taken care of those at no charge to us so far. So it's again one of the reasons we've sort of been loyal to them over the years because they've been loyal to us in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, how much you actually take these apart and fix them, given the cost of the warranty versus just buying 15% spares, that you just swapped in new.
Right,
they have guys come on site and take them apart,
do.
Or okay?
They do. And with a netbook, you can still replace components.
Right.
And that 3 years covers everything with the exception of the battery. The battery is usually only covered under a year.
Right.
But if the monitor were to crack or to break or the keyboard were to pop or something like that, yeah, they can come out and then they come on site and they repair it for us.
Or drop off the desk.
Do these have accelerometers on the... Will the disk shut down? No, it's pretty common. No, but I'm just saying, most now, if you can in a school, where it senses a fall, it shuts the, it takes the drug.
You know, I didn't ask him specifically about that piece of technology, but I
Yeah. I mean, I didn't look at all the specs, but I don't know if it's an option either. It's designed in or it isn't.
I mean, right. Yeah. I don't believe that was an inspection that would.
Right.
But I can ask him.
Yeah, I would prefer 11 inch. I mean, if you can get, you know, quotes on that, I just think the 10.1 is kind of small, you know, for something we're going to have for so long. Or even I've seen some of the low end 13s, you know, that you know are small form factor. Still might be in that range for what you're doing, and you know with some of the low power like Core 2 Duos and stuff, versus the Atoms where you have those.
Right.
I just see the netbooks are kind of fading out with the tablets.
Right.
Right. Most vendors aren't continuing a lot of new designs with them. So.
Right, and that's why I kind of saw these as sort of a stopgap until we get to that next phase of technology where it might be tablets. And they are coming out with an 11-inch that wouldn't be until this summer, but I did talk to the vendor this morning about that, and he says there will be a higher price point for the 11,
really?
For the 11-inch versus this one, because initially he thought they might be comparable. But now as they're getting close to a release, they're going to be a little bit more expensive than what we're looking at for these. And when I did look at the slightly bigger, I was looking at more of the 14-inch.
Yeah, no, I think more like 13. This 14, you're getting more to the traditional.
I did look at those with some of the scaled-down processors. And again, you're probably looking at a couple $100 more in unit. And then my concern then was with the carts we're looking at, I can get 20 of these into one of those carts. But the bigger model, I could probably only get 10.
Now, these carts, you string the regular power supplies in there, and then they just, where do the power supplies go? I mean, how do you charge them on the cart?
Actually, the carts we have now, I really like. Some of the old ones were really difficult to deal with, clunky, but we don't have one here. But it's a smaller, shorter cart, and the power is actually located towards the side, so they're easier. It's just a big power strip.
A big power strip, and then they plug each one
right,
in and just
then
put it
in. Back to a main cord that plugs into an outlet.
Okay.
They're a lot easier to get at. These are a lot easier to move around. They're not as heavy and bulky. So I just think the portability in the building, the smaller carts, and to be able to get 20 of those in there that you can move around. And I think for the computing needs that we're going to have at the junior high, these will fit. These will suffice for now.
How is our network, wireless network and infrastructure is going to be updated with?
We're going to have to bolster it. I mean, that's one of the things that we're looking at, we're starting to do right now. Is adding to our fleet of access points in the building. Wireless is something we're always going to struggle a little bit with in these buildings because they're all cinder block and steel, and wireless just does not defeat cinder block and steel. So we'll probably put an access point on each one of these carts, and then we'll have a supporting access point in the room. And for those, we'll probably will look at just consumer level access points because it's a price point to deal with. And basically, they're just doing the same thing a higher priced access point would do for us, which is just distributed wireless.
Right.
We don't do any higher level networking through the APs.
Right.
But that is something we will address this summer as well.
I guess when this comes forward, then I would just like to be able to see that, even if it's not for approval, at least that number, so that we know that going all in, this is what we need.
How many access points?
Right.
50. I'm looking at 50 in the summer to roll out. Not just
I mean,
and
problems.
What the cost of that is.
And I think the cost of that is $45 or $50 a unit.
It's probably more to install. Who installs those, though?
We do.
Okay.
We install those. We configure them and install them.
Because we already upgraded the backbone and all the switches and everything.
Right.
So for the phones and all that. Okay.
Where we're going to start to leverage some of that back-end technology we invested in the last couple of years. But I can get you the dollar amount. I want to follow up with that this coming week because I prefer to purchase those against this year's budget balance and then have those available for summer.
And you're getting widescreen monitors?
We're going to go with 19-inch widescreen.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, the old ones, that we had the LCDs. Are we replacing any of the ones that had LCDs or just CRTs?
All the LCDs are going to go away. We're going to get rid of all the LCDs. At the junior high, they still have quite a few 17-inch monitors.
Right.
We'll retain a good deal of those.
Okay.
And they'll still be used with the PCs that we distribute out.
Okay. That's what I was saying. I thought we had a lot of LCDs already.
Yeah.
Because you're getting new ones for all these.
We do. But they're also starting to fail over time.
Right.
But they'll be rolled out to replace some of the old LCDs we have. They'll also be part of the package as we move some of those older desktops out into the grade schools, not to mention they have at least some on hand for spares as they fail. Those I didn't, really didn't want to part with. So.
And then I sent you an email. You said you have, you're going to put XP on these initially, but then you have, you can put Windows 7 on with the same license.
Every PC we buy has a license for Windows 7. They really don't come with licenses for Windows XP anymore.
Right.
And I did talk to him about the 64-bit. He's going to include that. He'll revise the quote. There's no XP.
Yeah, if you're going to put 4 gig in, you might. Yeah, right. You're not going to get any benefit unless you're.
The reason I wanted to go with 4 gig is I wanted them to be capable of handling Windows 7 maybe in a year or two. We talked about upgrading to 7 this summer, but we just thought it'd be too much. It's just too much coming at everybody too quickly. So next year, when we do the grade school upgrades, then we may look at upgrading all of them to Windows 7. For this year, we'll probably give it an XP.
Yeah, I think if we do this again, we might put the warranty, or I mean the
leasing
info in the same time, you know, up together numbers, great. Just so everyone can see it.
And then I'll get the revision with the cards included on the dollar buyout.
And then the narrative somewhere, the ancillary costs that Dan's talking about, which would be total.
Yeah, it's still like TV's $1,200 cards.
Even though you're not asking for approval for that.
What?
No, I was
going
to get they're made like the gym equipment? Like the hammer strength stuff, like steel.
Oh, yeah. 500-pound
rating. Well, no, I'm sure it is. I guess I haven't paid attention to what why those cartridges cost $1,200.
That's on the low end.
I know. I'm sure that's just what they cost, but. Because is it more to lock up the computers or the charging stations?
Those aren't metal cabinets. We have gone on the low end on some of those cabinets, almost like a particle board, and they're not going to cost. What happens is the wheels fall off of those because they're not reinforced with any kind of metal, and it's just particle boards. So they're moving them through the buildings, particularly if they try to get them out into the portables. Yeah, they don't. We bought a few of those a couple of years ago, and within a month, half of those were in the trash. So it just didn't pay to go cheap on those. Any other questions?
Nope.
You think anything? Please feel free to email home. You can always keep those revisions.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay, the next order of business then this evening will be the renewal of the Johnson's publication agreement for the 11-12 Hadley yearbook. This is something that we bring to the Finance Committee and the Board annually in the spring. This is for the Hadley yearbook, which is a 64-page all-color hardcover book. The unit price is $14.30 this year. For 1,140 books, that comes to $16,300. This cost is a flow-through cost, and we collect the money from the kids and then for the cost of this book and just cut a check to the district. So there is no net, there's little if any net cost to the district. So we will be looking forward, looking to the support of the Finance Committee to move this forward for discussion at our next meeting on the 14th and to the Board for approval on May 2nd. Any questions? Okay, and the final order of business this evening, we're right on target, about 7 o'clock, is the Hadley Courtyard Project bid results. As you know, we have been talking about bringing forward a plan for the Hadley Courtyard over the past several months. We brought it to the Board last fall, and the Board asked us to go back and see about designing a more, something that's more educationally, environmentally, and economically sustainable over a period of time. So we met with various groups at Hadley, administrators, teachers, administrators at Hadley, as well as FPM, and we came back and presented the Board with a couple of different concepts. We have now gone out to bid. Those bids were due back last week on Thursday. We met and we received there was about seven or eight different contractors that picked up plans. There were only three that actually bid the project.
That's okay. We're just browsing through.
Okay. You need any documents up there?
That's what we're looking at.
I don't think I had the...
I don't have this.
That's in my...
Perfect.
Thank you. Sorry. Okay, so as you know, we went out to bid on March 16th. The bids were due back last Thursday, and they were due at 2 o'clock last Thursday afternoon. And we had those bid results. On page 2 of the board report is the base bid. There were three received, $207,082 from Light Construction, Copenhaver Construction for $219,000, and Kovalik Construction for $428,000. Now, I do want to mention that you see the alternates listed below there, the water feature. And I'll just speak to Light Construction as they were the low bidder. The water feature is priced at $38,000. The performance area is priced at $15,000. The drain tile foundation waterproofing at $7,000. The light fixtures for $13,000. That's a total price of $73,000. That is built into the $207,000 cost. Okay, so well, the total price is $207,000, but when we created the bid documents, we asked them to price each one of those
features.
Each one of those features individually. So if we decided to pull something out, we had the ability to do that.
That's true.
You're down to $130-some thousand. Well, you get the plan that was designed, as you saw during board presentation, except for those particular areas. Now, I don't recommend that we pull all of those out, but it's certainly conversation. When we originally presented this to the board, as we requested permission to call it the bid, we estimated construction cost at $150,000. $15,000 was estimated for small number. For total construction cost, approximately $165,000. However, we've had numerous conversations with the village. They are requiring us absolutely to account for stormwater in this project, and stormwater is approximated at $33,000. So, given the original estimate of construction cost of $150,000 plus the $33,000 for stormwater, this project would have come in at about $183,000 for the estimate. We should have estimated at that time.
So, there's a light bid. I'm just trying to remember in my previous packet the FGM cost. Contingencies and engineering that included in this 207.
No, that's just the construction cost. We pull those separate. We pull those out separately, and we build them into another line item of our budget. I think the FGM cost were estimated about $15,000, and the Erickson engineering cost were again about $15,000 to do all the stormwater analysis and application.
I have my notes from March 7th. The Erickson engineering fees were priced at $12,850.
So that would, so if I wanted to say what is the total cost for everything,
then I would add on the $207,000, the estimated cost for FGM as well as Erickson engineering.
Any other contingencies or anything?
There's $3,000 worth of allowances built into this project. You know, it's very defined. It's in a relatively small area. We don't anticipate, typically when we build our larger projects, we might have $80,000 or $100,000 or $125,000 worth of allowances built into the contract. Generally, as a result of, because of poor quality of soils that we've run into in numerous occasions. We don't expect anything like this in this area because it's basically foot traffic. We don't have commercial vehicles and so forth that we need to take into consideration when we're doing a parking lot or something along those lines.
So the drain tile foundation waterproofing, is that all the drain tile that was included, or is there others part of the base bid that had Dan's question earlier, what is the base bid if you take all this out of there?
It would be the 207.082 minus.
Right, I know dollar wise, but what would be feature wise, what would we have if we didn't have the water feature in the performance?
You have paper bricks and
grass.
And grass.
And some cement.
But no foundation work at all?
No.
Yeah.
Well, excuse me, maybe we're. What is your question? The reason that we've included drain tile and foundation waterproofing is because we've done this work on the other end of the east wing of Hadley.
Mm-hmm.
As we're going into this area, we thought it appropriate to do the same this year that we did last year.
So the other areas, the courtyard already have drain tile. And
we did that last summer as a result of some comments from teachers and so forth. We went out last summer, and I didn't bring it to the board. It was just a case of needing the work needed to be done, so we installed some drain tile, some stone, and so forth that has alleviated any air quality issues. We had a lot of standing water.
On the east side of the east wing?
Well, east and west side of the east wing.
Okay.
We go down about 8 or 10 feet.
Yeah.
Both of those areas were always holding water.
Uh-huh.
So we had complaints of water infiltrating the building. We had complaints of indoor air quality. We had a lot of complaints. Now, we did that last summer. We didn't have any complaints this fall, and thus far this spring, obviously, things are still going.
Mm-hmm.
But we have not had any complaints. We believe that we've resolved that issue. That's what we would like to do in the courtyard also, which is the area that slopes down. If you're familiar with the courtyard, and it slopes into that east wing, that has not been taken care of. We would like to address that as part of this summer project, because the area is going to be open anyways.
That's it right there, right? This is Bob, what you're...
Right, right. I was just wondering about... But the rest of the area that surrounds the courtyard doesn't have...
It's all
those
above ground.
It's all slab.
Yeah, it's all... It's, well, there are tunnels underneath. That, like the long hallway that runs along this mm-hmm. courtyard and the gym areas. There are tunnels that run underneath there, but this sits essentially on a slab. The other portions, like around the library, the teacher's lounge, and then the major portion of that long hallway are all at ground level or above. The reason that we're having to address this issue is because those other areas in the east wing sit below ground.
Right.
I guess my confusion is, and this was mine alone, I was expecting when it was broken out to see, you know, we kind of talked about that this bucket, this needs to happen. And then here's the classroom, and then here's the bonus or expanded classroom pieces, which I do see parts of those. And so I guess what's not clear to me here is that portion of the, you know, to fix the water issues. And I'm not sure if it's the 7,000 or if it sounds like it's more than the 7,000, but.
No,
well, it's the 7,000 except for the fact that you can't touch the place without
the stormwater.
Yeah.
But that's not the result of water problems. That's the result of disturbing the ground with them and putting something less permeable on top of it. So I think, Dan, the base bid, if you took all of the 73,000 out that Bob has identified here, you would have the ability for classrooms to go out into the courtyard with minimal, you know, you'd have some green space and some paving. So they would be able to have classrooms out there. They just wouldn't have the other features that are identified here. Does that make sense?
And didn't we have some extra stormwater detention built into the Hadley addition?
Yes, we did. And we talked about that. But for us to take stormwater from that mm-hmm. courtyard mm-hmm. and try to go under the building and take it out.
Is it a separate outfall?
It's just, it doesn't make any sense trying to go underneath the building. Because it's all on a slab. That LC and all those classrooms are on a slab that you would have to take all the way out to that storm field, which sits directly north of that six pod of portable classrooms.
Yeah.
Right in that area, about 50 or 75 or 100 feet out, is where we put that 15,000 cubic foot of stormwater detention.
Mm-hmm.
There's excess capacity there just because we wanted to account for it. But to run an underground pipe that length, just don't. There's only about 3,000 or 4,000 cubic feet of water here, a substantial amount of water, but not enough to spend that kind of money to drain it, to take it all the way out. Probably costs us more to do that than it would just to address it right here in this area.
The existing basin, there is an existing basin in the courtyard, a catch basin, right?
There is an existing
but
catch basin.
But it goes somewhere else.
It goes out to the front of the building. Okay. We've traced that out there.
To that detention area?
Well, no, it doesn't go there.
What does go there?
That we have.
I don't want to know.
Let me tell you, we talked about this since last summer, last fall, about not having to put stormwater in here, and I fucked the ballot, and I'm not.
The village won't let you get away without
gonna,
doing it.
Yeah. It's not going to happen. You touch that ground, I've got to address stormwater in there. And we went through there.
It's not like any water from that courtyard is going to make its way out into the street. Or
well, they did a dye test. It does go out to one of the sewers in the manholes, the parking
sewers.
Lot,
okay.
The front driveway there. That's where it goes into.
Okay.
So, and just again for my clarification, the water feature, the performance area, those pieces were from the conversations that you had had with math, science, language arts, etc., to figure out, what's the best way to utilize this space and make it program friendly, so we can do something out there.
All this work was done in consultation with other, members of the school, staff members of the district.
Right. Because I actually had had conversation with the science teachers too about the inquiry based work that they're doing now. They're in a biodiversity curriculum, and so, so they have the pools in the classrooms and that kind of thing, so they can actually do that kind of work. So,
okay. You could do it outside then.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's part of the emphasis of this is to draw it out.
Any other questions? So I would look to the Finance Committee for support on this, and we'll be taking it to the board for discussion on the 18th of April with the action plan for May 2nd.
And I think what I heard Dan say is that you'd like to see included, though not a part of the proposal, included the additional costs that we presented earlier around FGM's costs and the engineering costs. What's the total cost?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'll include that in an updated report for the board on the 18th of April. Any other questions then? Well, that's all the business I have for this evening. I thought it was going to take us a little longer to get through, but we made
it.
It's
a good job running us through it.
Anything in general you need to talk about? All right, then that's the end of this evening's meeting for the Finance Committee. Thank you.